Hopefully you'll be tuning in next week, where likely I'm going to have Jacqueline Keeler. I haven't actually talked to her about it, but she might be wanting to talk about the Native American view from Minneapolis, which was actually the site of the origins of the American Indian Movement in 1968, which actually formed as a result of a reaction to police brutality, where they actually formed patrols to protect the indigenous community of Minneapolis-St. Paul from gruesome police brutality, which is, as we see, continued, unabated to the present. But hopefully this is being shaken up, and hopefully the president of the police union in Minneapolis will resign, and hopefully what's going on in Portland will lead to some real changes in the police union contract, which was actually up for renewal this year, but I hear there's now talk of maybe putting it off because of the pandemic, etc. But it's 8:59. I got to get out of here. Thanks so much, Ty. Thanks everybody for called in, and for everybody for listening. This is Paul Rowland, Wednesday Talk Radio. Bye-bye.
Thank you. You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 8:59 a.m.
I think that we've made a mistake as a country to not give people that sense of this is what your heritage is. I think the mistake we made was this is a melting pot. Get rid of all of those ideas you have and become American. Because what is American? It hurts me when I hear people say, oh, I'm Heinz 57. You know, that's sad to me. What will happen and what will help is for the folks who were born and raised here and who are American to feel like they belong, and that it's okay for other people to be here too.
Welcome to Inside Washington County with Rob Solomon. We feature interviews with leaders in the community focusing on issues important to Washington County.
Welcome, Maria Caballero Rubio. Thank you so much for being here. Maria is the Executive Director of Central Cultural in Cornelius, President of our county's Human Rights Council, and is a leader in our county. Central seems to be doing so many programs and projects. Why is Central there? What is Central trying to achieve? What are your goals?
So our goal is to help families in need, families in crisis, families who don't have a support system already. We try to be that support system for them, that safety net, if you will. Mm-hmm. We have people coming to Centro for a variety of reasons. They need a letter translated because they don't speak the language. They need training for a better job because they're not making enough money. They're homeless. We have young people coming for tutoring because their parents can't help them because they don't speak the language. So we have people coming for a variety of reasons. And one of them right now is food insecurity. That is such a big issue right now among people living in poverty.
Understood.
And so that's something that we're dealing with, and we're working with several partners to address that problem. So Centro has become, because we've been here for 47 years now, it was started by a group of migrant farm workers who came from various states in the U.S. So my family came from Texas and then came up through California and then settled here in 1969. My parents came over from Mexico as braceros during the bracero program. The United States needed workers because mm-hmm. during the war, everybody was off to war, so
sure.
they brought in workers. And at the end of the war, they put them on buses and went back home.
Yeah.
But my father and my mother both came over, and they were braceros. They were on the bus. They said, okay, it's time to go. Our folks are back from war. They were on the bus ready to go home. And then all of a sudden, they were sitting in the back of the bus. I love to tell the story, by the way. They were sitting in the back of the bus, and the bus driver was just about to leave, and he heard some noise in the back. It sounded like a cat. So he said, hey, we can't take animals, so you need to get the cat off of here. So my mom came forward and said, it's not a cat, it's my baby. So she had a newborn. And so they made her get off the bus and told her, this is a U.S. citizen.
Oh, yes,
this
sure.
person needs to stay here. This is her country. And you need to stay and take care of her. Times have changed.
Haven't they?
And so that's how my parents were able to immigrate legally, by coming over at Traseros. And then they happened to have a child back then in the late 40s.
May I ask an appropriate question?
Yes.
Were you that child?
No, I wasn't.
I just couldn't help it.
That was my oldest sister, and it was 1948. Yeah.
Okay. So you were actually born in the
U.S.? Yes, I was born in Texas.
Great.
And then we grew up in California, up in Sonoma County, which is now the famous wine country and very expensive, but there were 11 of us kids.
Oh, my.
Mm-hmm. So we started coming up in the summers in 1965. 1969, we settled, and that's how we ended up here.
With such a population of diverse needs coming to Centro, you seem to have, over all these 47 years, developed a lot of different programs. Many are running just right now. Could you give us a view, a good look at those programs and how each of those programs help Centro to achieve the goal of helping the population?
So the first program I'll tell you about is, it's been running for over 10 years, way before I came, is our youth programs. We help Latino youth who may be struggling in school, not doing well in math and science and reading, to access STEM information and access to what STEM is all about. And unfortunately, all of those programs like Lego Robotics and all of those, they cost money, and a lot of our folks are low income, so our kids don't have access to that. With a partnership with Intel, over the years, we have been able to bring in engineers to work with our kids, and they develop relationships. They do more than teach them STEM and robotics and all of that. They mentor them, and they encourage them to do their homework, and they encourage them to stay in school. We have some kids now who are in high school who started off as maybe fifth graders in our STEM program, and they've graduated. Some of them are off to college, too. So we see the progression of kids accessing those services, becoming interested in STEM and STEAM. STEAM is the same as STEM, except we add an A for the arts, because the arts is very important as well, mm-hmm. in terms of, they've done some research and realized that the arts is important to technology as well.
Just wondering, the partnership with Intel, does that include over time looking to hire some of the folks that they mentor?
As a matter of fact, since we started our workforce center in Hillsboro, that's kind of been the goal. We want to establish that pipeline. But mostly the focus has been on working with youth, helping them access and be involved and become curious into those careers in technology.
Very valuable. You had mentioned, though, that it had been going on for 10 years, and I just wondered if someone had maybe started 10 years ago and gone through to the point where they had been hired.
It's 10 years,
it's possible.
Yeah, it's possible.
That's exciting. Could you tell me a little more about some of the other programs?
So the other program, which is the first thing that Centro ever provided, was information and referral.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of evolved. We used to just give people information. We would translate documents, make referrals to other organizations and government. But since over the years, it's turned into navigation, where, yes, we can send them over to DMV, but when they get there, they don't know how to navigate. They don't know how the system works, or to the school system, or the criminal justice system. So we help people navigate those systems that are even confusing to me at times.
So you send people to appointments with send staff or volunteers? How does that work?
We do that at first. Secondarily, we try to teach them how the system works.
Cool.
So that next time they can do it on their own.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe two or three times later, they can do
sure.
it on their own. So it's not only helping somebody, but giving the people the tools to do for themselves. And so that's kind of how it's evolved, our information and referrals process. It's navigation. And then from navigation is, you know, how to do it for yourself. And then lastly, it's we've kind of evolved and developed civic engagement, where we're teaching people how they can get involved in, you know, giving input, for example, to the city of Hillsborough or the city of Cornelius about what your needs are or how a policy that they're implementing or changing is going to impact you and your family and those kinds of things. So we are working with individuals to do that.
And how are the civic organizations responding? In other words, are Cornelius and Forest Grove, Hillsborough, the major cities on that part of the county, are they saying, give us your people, we want them on our commissions, we want them on our boards? Are you working together with them?
Oh, absolutely. It's a two-way street. And I have to say that over the past 10 years, local governments have really come a long way in terms of realizing that they need input from the community. For too long, and I'm going to speak about government as me because I worked in government for 30 years before coming to the nonprofit sector and then to others. We just kind of work, government, sometimes we work in silos, and they have policies, they have procedures, this is the way we do business, and without even thinking about how is it impacting the community, because the community changes, you know, socially, economically, politically, mm-hmm. but government's still doing the same thing the same way.
A tunnel vision type
idea. So what I've studied over the years is organizational learning, and I think that a lot of organizations have adopted that and continuous improvement. So I've seen it at the national level. I've seen it at the state level. People, the government, I think, is more open to having civilians or the community come in and actually even creating a place for them to come and give their input. When I came to Centro, I was charged with diversifying our income streams because we were reliant mostly on foundations and grants. And those things are 1 year, maybe 2 years, and then they run out and they expect you to stand on your own. And that just doesn't happen in the nonprofit sector. So we had to figure out a way to get ongoing funding and to keep our programs going. So we went out for contracts with local government, with state government, and now with the federal government, so that we are able now to, instead of referring people to the DHS office to apply for OHP or health insurance, we can do it ourselves because we have contracts with those organizations. We have contracts with TriMet to sign up people for their low-income FAIR program. And we have contracts with the city of Hillsborough and the state to provide workforce development services to folks. So we've kind of evolved and moved forward into getting, having earned income. We also do civic engagement and public engagement for Port of Portland, for Metro even, and others.
So I'm told, when you look at the background, 47 years is a long time. I was told that several of the founding members of Centro have recently left the state or, you know, are no longer able to contribute. Have you been having success or struggles in filling those positions? The reason I ask is because a lot of nonprofits have trouble getting good people on their boards to the point that it's become an industry for other nonprofits to try and get volunteers for nonprofits. How have you guys been doing at the board level?
We've been doing really well at the board level. I think people are very interested in Centro's success. And we actually have people from the banking industry coming and saying, hey, we need to do community service. Do you have a process for getting on your board? We get community members. I mean, I think that we're never at a loss for board members, which is very, very nice.
That speaks well for the organization.
Absolutely. And we even have elected officials, we have business owners, we have educators, we have Intel. So we haven't had a problem getting folks on our board. The what we call the elders, the folks that were here at the beginning, mm-hmm. They serve a very important purpose. I think that, you know, they've been here from the beginning. They've seen how things have changed. Not all of them have served on the board, but some of them have for several years, and they kind of remind the current staff,
sure,
why we're here,
they
and
carry
to kind of keep
history.
Us grounded. Yes,
sure.
Yes. And so that's a very important thing, and that I'll just talk about briefly, is that I think communities in our country in general are losing that connection with where we fit, you know, and where we come from and what's happened before. And now here are the young people, and they're ready and they're anxious and they want change, but they don't know what came before them. And so they're operating almost in a vacuum, and a lot of times that creates problems and issues. And so we try to maintain that. And so there has been some struggles in some of the elders, people who really care about them and love this organization, not wanting us to change things.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to progress. I mean, look at my staff. Everybody, most of my directors are 32 and under.
Mm-hmm.
And because I believe in youth, I believe that that's the future, and I need to scale them up to take over. So they come with ideas. Juan Carlos came back from Georgetown with ideas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I came back from D.C. We have somebody who has her master's in education that came from East L.A. as a teacher. So everybody's coming with new and fresh ideas, and we need to take advantage of that. So we have had some struggle in, you know, some folks not wanting us to make changes.
Mm-hmm.
These folks are the future, and we need to allow that. At the same time, keeping them grounded with why we're here, how things got started, and how you are here because there were other people who came before you and struggled and, you know, went through hell sometimes with issues and trying to get things done.
That's the perfect combination. You've got the grounding, and then you've got people motivated to make those changes, but you're dealing with resistance to change. It kind of puts you in the middle as far as some pretty tough management.
It's tough, but it's important. And, you know, sometimes you have to, you know, let them make decisions. You have to make the youth, let them make decisions, let them learn. They're going to fail. Let them fail, but let them
learn.
Let
them learn from that.
Yes. And that's a hard thing for directors to do. Not very many will take that risk. But I think it's important. I think that creates progress.
Understood. Central's doors are open to all.
Absolutely.
And when you look at the Latino population, mm-hmm, that comes through those doors, I'm curious as to whether Central finds any differences in the way that they would work with folks who are legal residents or citizens versus folks who are undocumented.
We actually work with everyone the same way, because everybody who walks in the door, whether they're documented or not, have the same needs. I mean, undocumented people just means you don't have that piece of paper,
mm-hmm,
but it doesn't mean that you're different. People come to Centro with degrees, looking for information, looking for work, looking for, you know, different things. We basically have the ethos of, you know, people who walk in the door will be respected. Mm-hmm. We will treat the undocumented person who walks in the door just like we treat the mayor who walks in the door. That's kind of how we work. We don't ask about their document, their status, their immigration status. If they volunteer it because it happens to relate to what they came for,
sure,
then we know. But we don't ask. Many times they don't tell. Over time, we do have people who continue coming because they feel safe there. They may be going through some process or crisis, and they need some support. So we do get several people returning. And in particular, our senior population, we have a Meals on Wheels program where we draw people from all over the county. And we on Fridays, we have home-cooked Mexican food. So we have about 50 to 60 seniors who come every day.
Based on your ability, your experience working with the population, what forms of discrimination are experienced by the people you serve? I'm sure there are issues in housing, employment, maybe there's physical intimidation, even police harassment or ICE harassment. What have you seen in the Latino community that they've had to experience, especially over the last few years as our national climate has changed somewhat?
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing is everybody assuming that we come from someplace else, and because we are brown skinned, we don't belong here, we're not native to this country. My particular family, we have four generations here now in Washington County, and there are others with more. But at the same time, people assume that we are not born here, and they want to know where we're from. And we say, okay, from Hillsboro. My daughter was born in Hillsboro. I'm from Hillsboro. Yeah, but where are you from?
Right.
Where did you actually come here from? Well, my parents moved here from California. Yeah, but you know, it's tiring. You've heard this from other communities of color. They go through the same thing. That is just like the basic thing that we go through all the time. But I think since the new, even before the new administration, when the president was running and the way he introduced his, you know, candidacy was so demeaning and hurtful and just wrong, it just basically traumatized us. You know, it's like, oh my gosh. And so we've had to deal in the nonprofit sector, those of us that work with folks who are undocumented and even people who are just people of color and documented and born and raised here, we've had to now, instead of just delivering the services that we raise money to do, now we have this other layer of work of dealing with people's traumas, of having to learn about immigration and how it works, and how does ICE work, and what about DACA? And people are coming to us because they trust us, and we don't have that information. So it's really detracted from the work that our real work, that not that that isn't our real work, but we're being forced to become advocates.
Yes.
We're no longer just service providers. Now we are advocates. So to answer your question, it's been a struggle because it's not only impacted the families, it's impacted our kids. Kids would come to our after-school program and tell us how they were being jeered at in the playground. Other kids telling them, hey, come election day, you're out of here, buddy. You know, your parents are gone and you're gone.
Well, there was the whole Forest Grove High School incident with the banner and the walkouts and everything else. It was both horrible and actually kind of positive in the response. The community response was pretty good,
yeah,
as I recall.
It was very good. Even our elected officials' response was really good. But still, there's this internal instability and trauma and sense of, got to watch my back now, whereas they didn't feel that much before. Perhaps undocumented people have always felt that way. But for now, even U.S.-born citizens aren't safe anymore because now it's kind of being threatened that a lot of folks have mixed status families.
Mm-hmm.
Person might be born and raised here, but they happen to marry someone who didn't have status. Now they have kids who do have status.
Mm-hmm.
And so here you have families now being separated. But it has been a struggle, and I have to say to most of the nonprofits that serve Latinos and other people of color, that fear factor.
Well, what we've been looking at just in the last moment or so is issues of discrimination that folks, documented and undocumented, as you clearly state, are getting from the outside community.
Mm-hmm.
What about inside the Latino community? Are undocumented folks treated differently by those folks who have legal status?
We come from a culture where we look out for each other in groups. It's when I talk about my family, it's not just my nuclear family. It's my 11 brothers and sisters and their husbands and wives and all of their kids and all of the in-laws and all of the cousins. I mean, that's my family.
Sure.
So what impacts one impacts all of us. And I think that that kind of carries over to the community where we look out for each other. Documentation, I mean, a document doesn't mean anything. I think it's like we're all in this boat together because we all have brown skin.
And the level of fear is not that significantly different if you're undocumented or not. That's quite a powerful statement, and I sincerely understand it. How do you work with others in the community? You mentioned partners. Who are your major partners that help you to work towards achieving your goals?
And I say this all the time, we could not do what we do without partners. Intel provides these engineers that are Latinos. I mean, they have people from all over the world who
sure.
come to work here. And they come out here and they do their volunteer work. They go to many other nonprofits, but I'm talking about the work they do for us.
Right.
And just to be able to watch, you know, these young kids coming from parents that are undocumented or farm work, interacting with engineers who care about them, who speak like them, who look like them. You cannot imagine
it's opportunity.
What that does. Yes.
It's a real, meaningful opportunity.
Yes. We also have partnerships with local government. The county has always provided, well, at least for the past 6 years, have provided us a level of funding to help keep our facility running
mm-hmm.
for operations, for repairs, and that kind of thing. Because, you know, when I took this job, I thought, oh, piece of cake. I can run programs, supervise staff. But there is this whole other facility. Facility management is mm-hmm. another.
Boilers break down or what have you, kitchen equipment.
Our HVAC system, we have a commercial kitchen. So all of that is like another job and another budget. So, I mean, that I learned that, you know, in terms of that. But so the county's been very supportive. The cities have been very supportive as well. Like I mentioned, the city of Hillsboro gave us a 5-year contract to work with people who live within the enterprise zone. There's a concentration of folks there who are unemployed, who don't have a high school diploma, who are single parents, who are living in poverty. And those are the folks that we are targeting to get them into jobs in manufacturing to meet the needs of the companies there. We have a good partnership with TriMet, as I mentioned. Mm-hmm. We do some work for them. So, we have a really good relationship with them.
Excellent. Sounds like a fantastic base to enable all parties to work together.
Mm-hmm.
You've been executive director for 4 years, did you
yes.
say? What policy changes have you brought to, or changes have you brought to Centro since you were hired?
Well, what I've done is I think I've, like I mentioned earlier, kind of diversified our funding streams to get more consistent and ongoing sustainable funding. When I came on board, our budget was maybe $300,000, and we are now up to $2.1 million because of the partnerships that we've built and because of the contract work, the earned income that we've been able to do. I think the other sort of a policy change, if you will, is that our mission statement said that we serve Latinos. Before it was Mexican Americans, and then we moved to Latinos. A couple of years ago, we went through a process and we realized, our world is changing, and the world, even our community here is growing, and we're seeing all kinds of other cultures. So we changed it to communities of color. So we serve everyone now. And as I mentioned before, we have had some pushback from some of the founders. And that was a big issue for folks at that time. But I felt strongly that we needed to put that word that out there, that we are all in this together, that we're serving everybody who walks in the door. We want people to feel welcome coming there.
Being human, Maria, we all, you, me, make mistakes from time to time. Can you think of any mistakes you've made in your role as executive director that proved to be a valuable learning opportunity?
I've made many mistakes, and hopefully I've learned from them. I think one of the mistakes that comes to mind is not, and I have learned from this, not being aware of the next generation's needs. There are intergenerational issues across the board, across the country, in the workplace right now, because there are 5 generations working right now. So I've done some research and I've done training on that area, but intergenerational issues are big in our country right now. So we are a microcosm of that as well. So not being aware that the young people coming to us, graduating from college, have different perspectives and different expectations, and needing to know and understand what those are and to see how we adjust those with what our mission is. They may have an expectation that they can come in here and they can change things like today, and not being able to make those changes happen and having people feel disenfranchised because of that has been a real issue for us. The other mistake was that we grew very quickly and didn't really take the time to do incremental growth in terms of creating internal systems.
The infrastructure.
Infrastructure. I think a lot of nonprofits, or even small businesses, make that mistake. I made that mistake. We grew and we got programs and money, but our HR system, our internal policies and operations and all of that were a problem. So we're working on that. We've been working on that for the past 2-3 years now.
I've been looking so forward to this opportunity to interview you, and I've learned so much. But I've also been holding back one question that I sincerely know is difficult. It's going to be hard for you, but I can't let you leave without asking you. In your judgment, Maria, based on your experience, what would it take to eliminate or at least substantially reduce discriminatory behavior in our county?
I've thought a lot about this, quite frankly. I mentioned earlier that people are feeling disconnected from their roots. Mm-hmm. People are feeling disconnected from their church, from their schools, from their families, people in general. Mm-hmm. And so people are feeling lost. They don't feel a sense of who am I and what am I doing here and what am I contributing. I think that we've made a mistake as a country to not give people that sense of this is what your heritage is. I think the mistake we made was this is a melting pot. Get rid of all of those ideas you have and become American. Because what is American? It hurts me when I hear people say, oh, I'm Heinz 57. You know, that's sad to me because now we're seeing the result of people who don't have that sense of belonging and where they came from and who, what are the values of their culture and their families. That is missing. So when they see people who are different, they feel a sense of, I don't have what they have, and why are they doing that? That's ridiculous. Just be an American. I was told that all my life, and all my life I tried that. I tried not to say I'm Mexican-American, I'm Chicana, I'm, you know, whatever. But I wasn't allowed to do that. So, you know, in my work in organizational culture change, I start with the people who are there, majority white culture, and have them identify, go through an identity process about who they are, because they all have an identity of some sort, whether it's a religion, their geographic area they came from, gay, lesbian, I mean, all of those things. And they go through a process of feeling like, yes, this is who I am. And then so when you bring in the concept of diversity and other people who are different, they're more ready to listen. That was a long-winded answer for you, and it's probably never going to happen. But I think that what will happen and what will help is for the folks who were born and raised here and who are American to feel like they belong and that it's okay for other people to be here too.
Maria Caballero Rubio, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for your work.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Inside Washington County with Rob Solomon. Go to our website, insidewashco.org, to contact us or leave comments on this interview. This series is produced by Rick Paulson.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Today on Wings, the history of the feminist press.